Wow. Good morning, bonjour. Bonjour à tous, je m'appelle Robert Primavesi, je suis le vice-doyen du programme prédoctoral de la faculté de médecine de l'Université de McGill, et j'aimerais vous souhaiter le bienvenue à la cérémonie 2012 de Donning the Healer's Habits. Good morning, everyone. My name is Robert Primavesi. I'm the Associate Dean for Undergraduate Medical Education for the Faculty of Medicine at McGill University, and I would like to extend a warm welcome to our 2012 Donning the Healer's Habits ceremony. We will start this morning's program with a musical prelude by I Medici di McGill, string quartet. Nous allons commencer la cérémonie avec un prélude musical de Quatuor I Medici di McGill. Alors, je vous prie de fermer vos téléphones cellulaires, vos pagettes, et aussi de ne pas prendre des photos pendant la cérémonie. Un photographe professionnel prendra des photos de chaque étudiant au moment qu'il recevra le cerveau blanc. Les photos seront disponibles gratuitement pour les étudiants, incluant un DVD de le programme. All right, I would like everybody to please turn off your cell phones and your pagers, and request you that you do not take photos during the ceremony. We do have a photographer who will be taking photos of all our students as they receive their white coats, and the pictures and a DVD are available on request from the events office free of charge to all our students. This is the 10th annual white coat ceremony for I Medici di McGill String Quartet, who has been privileged to perform in all 10 white coat ceremonies so far. The quartet is composed of members of the I Medici McGill Orchestra. The ensemble is in its 24th season and comprises about 75 members. The mission of I Medici is to provide musical content for various events in the life of the faculty, university, and the community, and thus add a unique social dimension to medical education in the profession. I'd like to introduce the musicians. Dr. Ante Pagin, viola, is the founder and director of I Medici di McGill. Dr. Pagin is trained as a musician, a physician, and a scientist at the University of Zagreb in Croatia, University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and the NIH in Washington, D.C. Since 1976, he's professor of pharmacology and therapeutics at McGill University, doing research in neuroscience, alcoholism, and medical informatics. During the last 10 years, he has increasingly engaged in development of international projects in neuroscience in the developing world. Hee-won Yoon, first violin, is an undergraduate student in the Department of Pharmacology and Therapeutics. Thomas Quayle, second violin, is a graduate student of Dr. Leon Glass, who is a horn player for I Medici, in the Department of Physiology Center for Nonlinear Dynamics, and is a principal violist in the orchestra. Melanie Segato, cello, is a graduate student of Drs. Zatori and Penhoon in the interdisciplinary program Neuropsychology of Music Performance, and is a principal cellist in the orchestra. The program for today is Johann Sebastian Bach, Suite No. 3 Air, and Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Divertimento in D, K-136 Allegro.
Thank you.
So if you actually like what you heard, I Medici is holding a free public concert on Sunday, November 18th at the Notre-Dame de Lourdes Church in Verdun, in collaboration with the choirs Musica Orbium and Concerto della Donna, in the performance of Hodi by Ralph Vaughan Williams. Alors, bienvenue aux étudiants de la classe 2015, et leurs familles et leurs amis. C'est un grand moment pour tous ceux qui ont contribué à la formation de ces futurs médecins. To the students of the class of 2015, their families and friends, welcome to the Donning of the Healer's Habit ceremony. It's a very proud moment for everyone who has contributed to getting the students to where they are today. This event is so popular and the class is so large that we do not have enough room for everybody in this room. However, thanks to modern technology, we have live streaming with the Martin Theater, so we shall be able to wave. So it's almost like being in the same room. Is that true? There we go. All right. And I think we're ready for the next slide anyway. I would like to acknowledge a special group of faculty members who are here in attendance today. These are the Oster Fellows for the class of 2015. The Oster Fellows are named in honor of the great McGill teacher, Sir William Osler. The Oster Fellows represent some of the faculty members, best teachers, who have been assigned to tutor and mentor groups of six students from the very first day of medical school right through to graduation. I'd like the Oster Fellows, as well as Dr. Barry Slapkoff, director of the Oster Fellowship Program, to stand so we can acknowledge your contributions to the education of our students. I'd also like to acknowledge Dr. Ann Wexler, who's seated on the platform. Dr. Ann Wexler is one of the founding members of the White Coats ceremony a few years ago. And she very kindly picked up our keynote speaker, Dr. Gold, from the Leacock building where he was teaching a class to get him here today on time. So thank you, Dr. Wexler. So first-time Oster Fellows will receive a copy of William Oster to Oster Fellows, a draft of an address in Sir William Oster's hand, and veteran Oster Fellows will receive a copy of William Oster, A Life in Medicine. And for the students of the class of 2015, the donning of the white coat marks your transition from a layperson to a professional. Sir William Oster said, the student begins with the patient, continues with the patient, and ends his studies with the patient, using books and lectures as tools, as a means to an end. In January, we'll take your studies of medicine from the classroom to the bedside, and this is where you will learn to practice medicine for the rest of your careers. By donning your white coat, you accept to provide the highest standards of ethical care to your patients as individuals and to meet the wellness needs of society. You make this commitment in front of your peers, your family, and your friends. It is a big responsibility, but one that you have studied long and hard for, and one that we are confident you are ready to assume. At this point, I would like to invite Dr. David Eidelman, Vice Principal of Health Affairs and Dean of the Faculty of Medicine, to address the class. J'inviterai maintenant Dr. David Eidelman, Vice-Principal de Santé et Affaires Médicales et doyen de la Faculté de Médecine, à s'adresser à la classe de 2015.
Bonjour tous, merci beaucoup. Thank you very much, Dr. Primavesi. Je vous souhaite tous la bienvenue. C'est pas seulement en tant que doyen, mais en tant que médecin que j'ai le grand honneur aujourd'hui de vous adresser et adresser surtout la classe de 2015 et à toutes les invités qui sont ici aujourd'hui. I have a few words to say, but before I do, I want to thank our guest speaker, Dr. Phil Gold, who will be addressing you soon, and I can tell you that I still remember the talk he gave on our first day of med school, And so I'm sure it will be very his talk will be very entertaining. We're looking forward to a great speech, Bill. I also want to reiterate thanks to, I want to thank Dr. Don Boudreau, who was instrumental, along with Ann Wexler, of setting up this wonderful ceremony back in 2001. Now, like you, students, this is my first white coat ceremony. When I was in medical school at your stage, of course, we did get white coats. It was 1976. It was the Olympic year. And, you know, in those days, things were different. I had returned back to school, just like you guys, we were already well in school, but we had spent part of the summer. The med students at Université Montréal and McGill were given the opportunity to play a role in the Olympics. And that was the main thing that was on our mind, because we had a very glamorous professional role. We were responsible for collecting urine from the athletes. So we were the pee police. So that was really cool. But by contrast, the way we started our time as medical students on the wards was not really so cool. Of course, we got white coats, just like you guys, and we didn't get a ceremony, though. In those days, things just happened. They told you, here's your coat. I see some of the older fellows nodding. Here's your coat. Show up at a certain time, and off you go. And things just happened. And like good baby boomers, we did what we were told, and we knew that doctors wore white coats, so obviously we should wear white coats. This was the sort of level of thinking that went on at that time. Aujourd'hui, cependant, nous sommes engagés dans un événement très important. C'est vraiment un moment très important dans l'évolution de chacune de vos vies et aussi dans la carrière en tant que futur médecin. À noter, vos nouvelles blouses sont courtes. Comme vous savez, il est le coutume ici à McGill pour les étudiants de porter des blouses courtes. C'est exactement la même chose quand moi, j'étais étudiant. Et quand on va, à un moment donné, diplômé, il y aura des sarraux longues. Et aussi, c'est à noter que les sarraux sont fonctionnels. D'abord, ça protège les vêtements. Deuxièmement, il y a des poches. Et on peut les enfiler avec toutes sortes d'équipements et aussi les collations qui sont essentielles sur les étages. Mais c'est certainement la caractère symbolique des sarraux qui est important. Et il faut vraiment, si on y pense, ces blouses-là, ça rappelle un peu les costumes qu'ils portent des prêtres ou des chamans dans certaines cultures. Et dans ce sens, le sarrau, c'est une sorte de vêtement spécial réservé aux guérisseurs. So, it's a healer's costume. But of course, physicians didn't always wear white coats, as you know. It only started about 100 years ago as part of the modernization of medicine, part of the cultural shift, where we're trying to make medicine more of a scientific enterprise and wear the same white coat that someone would wear in the lab. And of course, it's a bit controversial about white coats. We were talking about this earlier. First of all, psychologically, some people believe wearing a white coat separates the healer from the patient. The other thing is, of course, it may spread germs and be a vector of infection. Nevertheless, there is some evidence that patients actually prefer to have a physician who wears a special costume, like a white coat. And this is probably because we like to feel that the healer that we're dealing with is somehow has a special appearance to sort of physically demonstrate that they're in the process of carrying out a healing function. And in this way, we have much in common with the healers of the past. Of course, we can wear our white coats with some pride. I mean, they're symbols also of science. And nowadays, physicians are healers in the true sense because we're living in the days of evidence-based medicine, something that hadn't been invented in my time, although we were trying to do it. But modern-day doctors do try and practice scientific medicine. And some of us actually are healers and scientists at the same time. So when putting on this coat, you're taking on a mantle, taking on the great symbol of being a physician, and making the transition from layman to professional. The coat conveys professional responsibilities that you will carry with you throughout your entire career. It's symbolism of a very high order. It's the first step in becoming the doctor you will be one day. And while today you don a physical coat, during your career you're going to adapt your appearance to your professional path that you choose, and your white coat or whatever you're wearing will be a reflection of the role you're playing, a reflection of you. The white, even if you end up in a specialty where you don't wear a white coat, or in a hospital that doesn't let you wear one, the white coat symbolism is all the same, very, very, still just as potent, and should be seen as an emblem of trust, the trust between you and the patient with whom you have a relationship. We are confident that you can and will develop the skills necessary to merit that trust. And I'm sure that with every interaction with your patients over the years, you'll be able to continue the enduring appeal of the white coat that you wear as a symbol of hope, hope and healing. Now, although putting on a white coat is a simple act, it's a meaningful moment both for you, but also for those close to you. To get to this place and to this moment, you had to work very, very hard. But, of course, you didn't do it alone. When you did it, you had the support of your family and your friends, many of whom are here today. And so this is a moment of great pride for them as well. You're fulfilling your hopes and dreams that they've invested in you. And so to all those families and friends who are here, I say thank you. Alors, futur médecin, je vous en félicite. I want to wish you every success in everything you do. Merci beaucoup.
Notre conférencier principal est Dr. Phil Gold, and it's a great personal pleasure that I introduce you to our keynote speaker, Dr. Phil Gold. I actually met Dr. Gold before medical school when I was an undergraduate student at McGill, taking 500-level immunology courses so I could learn from the professor who discovered carcinoembryonic antigen, or CEA, one of the first human tumor markers. I later met Dr. Gold again at the Montreal General Hospital as a family medicine resident on the internal medicine wards. And as physician-in-chief, Dr. Gold liked to do chief of service rounds where he would come to the wards and the residents would present challenging cases to him. And it took him about 10 minutes to determine that my patient with episodic shortness of breath had recurrent pulmonary emboli, something that I could not have, was not able to figure out in the previous 10 days. Of course, we also didn't have spiral CT scans then. And since then, I've made my clinical career at the Montreal General, so I've had many more opportunities to work with Uncle Phil, both in the hospital and at McGill. Dr. Gold graduated from the MBC program at McGill in 1961. He spent a year as a rotating intern at the Montreal General, followed by a year of residency in medicine, and then he dropped out to do a PhD in physiology that resulted in the discovery and the early definition of carcinoembryonic antigen, or CEA. He returned to the Montreal General to complete his residency in medicine and a fellowship in clinical immunology and allergy, followed by postdoctoral training at the New York Public Health Research Institute in New York City. Dr. Gold is currently a professor of medicine, physiology, and oncology, and the executive director of the Clinical Research Center at the McGill University Health Center. He has served as physician-in-chief of the Montreal General, chair of the Department of Medicine, and the inaugural director of what is now the Rosalind Morris Goodman Center, Cancer Research Center. He has won numerous national and international awards for his work as a researcher, a clinician, as an educator, and I can think of no better role model to address the class today on this important juncture in your professional career.
Am I really that old? My God. Thank you, Robert. Mr. Dean, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I'm truly delighted to address this very important academy. I'm sure that every person in this audience has been responsible in some fashion for making this ceremony possible. And that would include you, our honorees, the White Coat recipients, your friends and your parents in particular, who today will likely forgive you all the youngs you caused them as teenagers. So take advantage of that. And we're all equally proud of you as you move on in your medical education from the theoretical to the practical aspects of patient care. As the flyer says, and everyone has mentioned today, you don the white coat. It's a healer's habit. We usually think of a habit of dress as it relates to religious orders, but it's equally important for the medical profession since both are committed to doing good. And it should be a habit of behavior not only in dress, but also in the usage of the word ordinarily, in things we do repeatedly, daily, without having to give it a lot of thought, because it's appropriate. As Charles Duhigg has recently described in his book, The Power of Habit, it becomes a way of life. Let's talk about how you got here. I know you're all particularly unique, but there are three things that determine our lives, all of our lives. Genes, environment, and luck. If you have a choice, take luck. As you know, we live in an age of omes, and the genome looks after all things genetic. And you inherited that from your parents. Again, very important to you. Your parents are your gene donors, half from mom, half from dad, but also the countless generations that preceded them in constructing the genome that you now carry. But think of this for a minute. At this moment, you are the end product, the end point of evolution of your genome. Hopefully you will pass that along, but I think it's a rather pointed thought. The environment, the second point, is looked after by the epigenome, which you all know about now, where the genome expression is altered by the environment, both physical and psychological, not in structure, just in expressivity, without any change in gene structure per se. The physical environmental factors are everything that we've eaten, drunk, and breathed, and been exposed to throughout our lives. But it also likely includes the experiences of our forebears, since we now know that the epigenome can be transmitted transgenerationally. It's a remarkable phenomenon. As concerns the psychological aspects of the environment, a lot of work being done by Moshe Schiff and Michael Meany at McGill, terribly important work. Let me link that to the third factor that determines our lives, which is luck. And to be consistent, for luck, I've coined the term the fortunal. And I once felt that we should start to examine the molecular biology of the fortunome, but I've subsequently changed my mind. Because I think that basically it's not a molecular pathway at all, but rather the sum of all the individuals that we've met who have, in some fashion, impacted on our lives and brought us to our present destinies. In Tennyson's words, I am part of all that I have met. These will be different people for each of you, but each of you will know who those people are. And here I believe that the epigenome and the fortunome come together. So now that we've established how you've gotten here, with your genomes and your epigenomes and your fortunomes, what do we want from you? It's very simple. We want you to be good, perhaps even great, doctors. And that's not entirely altruistic, because it's not uncommon in discussions with colleagues to hear the plaintive cry over the centuries, who will look after us? In fact, you will, which is rather important that you be good doctors. Now that we know how and why you're here, the question is, why am I here? And I must admit that I've struggled with the answer to that question over the last number of weeks. Should it be thoughts for your entire professional lives? That's a bit presumptuous. Or perhaps just things that you're going to face over the next few years. And so it's not unusual, I've compromised with a bit of each. Let me begin with a quote from Woody Allen's favorite philosopher, Kierkegaard. who has written famously that life can only be understood backwards, but must be lived forward. And that also is the key to medical education and medical practice. The key, of course, is not to do anything going forward that may harm the patient before you have the knowledge going backwards. And so, address this matter and other concerns, I've come up with goals 10 rules. Not the golden rules, I promise you, nor the 10 commandments, just the 10 suggestions. Rule number one, you are never alone. And this relates to learning backwards, but living forward. There will always be those to whom you can turn for help. And this will go on throughout your lives. There are very few days in which very good doctors see patients without getting a consult from someone else who knows something more about a particular problem than they do. And so in the next few years, you will deal with the senior students in your group, with the residents on the ward, with the attending staff, with the chief of service, with any of the consultants. And never hesitate to do so, even at 3 o'clock in the morning. The person that you wake may not be happy to have been awakened, but they're going to be a lot less happy in the rounds and morning if you haven't called. So please call. Rule number two, you are not a fifth wheel. It's not unusual for those in the ward in second year to feel somehow that they don't belong. The patient, in fact, has been seen by senior students, by residents, by attending staff, by consulting specialists. What are you doing with them? Please remember that without you, we forfeit our right to call ourselves academic medical centers, deeply committed to the education of people such as you and beyond. Without you, I'm out of a job. That's not good. So you are due the respect of any other medical professional. Please remember that as you go through the wards. Rule number three, ask stupid questions. With stupid and inverted commas. Don't be embarrassed to ask if you don't understand anything, a concept, a procedure. The chances are that those around you don't understand either, and they also won't ask. So that the most important contribution you're going to make to academia in the next few years is to ask why. Because if you don't ask why, then your mentors will forget what the answers are. And perhaps not even rethink things they should from day to day and year to year. The only stupid question is the one that you don't ask. Rule number four, don't wrinkle your forehead and say, oh, tell you why. This year you'll approach the patient, first timidly, and say, my name is Jane Smith, I would like to examine you, would that be okay? And most patients who are bored with long days in hospital will say yes. Now, you know you're a second-year student. They know you're a second-year student. But as soon as you sit down with a pen and pad and begin to ask questions in the minds of many, you are now a doctor. So after getting an answer to a question, you wrinkle your forehead and say, oh, you scare a lot of people. Aha is a much better comment. Rule number five, go back and visit the patients that you've examined. Many patients have few visitors, and your visits can do a great deal of good psychologically, which, as you know, is a very important aspect of the healing process. It will also allow you to follow the course of the disease, and indeed, this year you may have more time to do that than you will in the future. Use that time well. Rule number six, listen, think, and then act in that order. But above all, listen. Of all the things that I remember from Sir William Osler and erstwhile McGillian, the quotation that always comes to mind is, listen to your patient, he is telling you the diagnosis. Yet remarkably, in a recent book by Jerome Groopman called How Doctors Think, he makes the point that after asking the patient why they're here, the office, the clinic, the emergency room, and the average time the patient speaks before the doctor interrupts, is 18 seconds. You can't learn a lot in 18 seconds. So for goodness sake, listen. Rule number seven, learn from each patient. The first patient you see with any condition is the same patient you're going to see in your mind's eye every time you see someone with that disease. In addition, every patient will teach you how a particular individual, perhaps a culture, looks upon a disease process. And by the way, you will soon begin to learn from each other, and then later from your students, who for me have been a major source of my education. Rule number 8, never remove hope. No matter how bleak a situation may appear, the patient must be left feeling that everything will be done to palliate, to alleviate the condition. Never lie to the patient about the severity of the problem, but always leave a light of hope before you leave the patient. And rule number 9, always provide comfort. As far as I know, comfort is the only medication that can be delivered through the ear. It's also fine to hold the patient's hand. That's not assault in the medical context. And it's hopefully one of the reasons that you're all here today. Rule number 10, the most important of all. For this, I need a simple one. That rule is Menschlichkeit. For those of you who don't know the word, let me explain. It is derived from the German and has now been accepted in many, many languages. Literally, to be a Mensch means to be a person. But in the vernacular use, to be a Mensch, or Menschlichkeit, means to manifest humanity. A Mensch is a carrier of that humanity. You've all had the remarkable experience provided by the doctor's Kruse and professionalism. But if I were asked to summarize what they want to teach you in one word, it would be Menschlichkeit. Humanity that encompasses altruism, compassion, and commitment. So, with these thoughts in place, let me assure you that there will be good days and others that are not quite as good in your career. Most of the time, as you follow patients longitudinally, from day to day, you will win, and they will do well. But death is even more pervasive and absolute than taxes. There are no death-free havens, so you have to be prepared for that too. Now, with regard to the good and the bad days, allow me to be subjective for a couple of minutes. There are times when you will win beyond your most optimistic expectations. And in this regard, the patient that stands out in my mind is a young woman I saw with a second-year class, like yours, some 30 years ago. There's sort of a game I've devised, and we'll play it with some of you this year, where we go through the history and devise a differential diagnosis. A group of 20, in every group, they break up into groups of 3, and one of them becomes the patient. After having examined the patient, the other 17 outside of the 3 then have to get a history and develop a differential diagnosis. The patient in question was in her early 20s. By the history obtained from her avatar in the group of 3 and the subsequent information after we had the differential that we obtained from the others, she had a classical case of Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism. And she'd been treated successfully, and we discussed the treatment, and everything was just fine. In addition, however, as we went through the history, we learned that she dropped out of high school at a quite early age, left home, and then developed some fairly expensive habits on the street that she was supporting by prostitution. As I left the class, I said that we could really pat ourselves on the back for curing her Graves' disease, but what in fact had we accomplished for her life? Now, to my absolute amazement and delight, about 6 students in that group of 20 took my words as a challenge. And in manners in which I was never privy, they convinced her to clean herself up. It couldn't have been easy, even though she'd been off her recreational activities while in the hospital. And they convinced her to return to high school. My job at that point, from a rather checkered childhood, was still to know a man who knew a man who got her employer, shall we say, to leave her alone, which he did. Not sure how they had got, I didn't even ask how that happened. From high school, she went on to CSHEP, and from there to Concordia University. My next job was to convince a couple of colleagues in the Faculty of Law who were assured of deniability to take a chance on her. Like ABBA, take a chance on me. She graduated from our law school in the upper 10th percentile of the class and now practices family law in a moderately sized city in Quebec. When she drops by Montreal, we have coffee in the hospital tuck shop. This is one of the few times that I've been involved in curing not only a disease, but in curing a life. So just to make the point that medicine doesn't stop at the office door or the clinic door or the hospital door, but it goes right back into the community of which we are a part and on which we can never, ever turn our backs. But then there will be times when you will lose. But there are good ways of losing, too. And here, the patient that comes to mind when I was a resident was from the Indian subcontinent. His forebears had been farmers, and as a boy, he had worked the soil, but then became a very good entrepreneur, had a number of places going, but lived in Montreal, where he had one of his offices. On the mission during which I saw him after a number of previous hospitalizations, he had reached a terminal stage. There was nothing more to be done, and both he and his family were aware of that. When I would see him on rounds or chat from day to day, he would always say to me that he felt silly about dying in bed. People should die close to the soil, he would say. And so on a warm night in the summer, when it became obvious that he would not live through the next day, and with the help of the head nurse that night and an orderly, we put him on a gurney and moved him to a blanket on the grass outside the hospital, broke any hospital rule known to man. I sat with him and his wife and his two sons until just about sunrise, as if directed by Spielberg, actually. As the sun rose, he died. But I think he died well, close to the soil. That was about a half a century ago, but I've never forgotten him. Worth keeping in mind. So what all of the foregoing said, with all of the information that you've gained, with all of the education that you've had, particularly in the last year or so, I think that you're ready to hit the wards of the hospital and to go on to the next part of your careers. So at this time, let me wish you good luck and Godspeed.
Thank you, Dr. Gold. I would like now to introduce you to another Phil. So last year at this time, Phil Vertsumis, class of 2013, was busy making sure that his class was well informed when the Fédération de Médecins de Résidents de Québec and MUNACA, McGill University's non-academic certified associate, went on strike to negotiate for better contracts. It's something he did with the utmost sensitivity and professionalism. As a Quebec regional representative to the Canadian Federation of Medical Students for the 2011-12 academic year, Phil has established himself as a student leader. 2 years ago, Phil put on his white coat for the first time in his very room. Now in his fourth and final year, Phil is here to give us his reflections on his journey in medicine. Phil Vertsumis, membre de la classe 2013, a reçu son cerveau blanc il y a 2 ans. Il est maintenant en quatrième année. Phil va partager avec nous ses réflexions des 2 dernières années. Phil.
I guess I'm junior Phil, Dr. Phil. All right, thank you, Dr. Primavesi. Good morning, Dr. Eidelman, members of the Faculty of Medicine, Osler Fellows, family and friends, special guests, and the special guests watching from all over the world. And last but not least, particularly, the class of 2015. Thank you very much for inviting me today to be a part of your special day. I am deeply honored to stand before you representing the class of 2013, and as a colleague, to give you a glimpse into your professional future. Before we begin, let's take a quick look back to the moment you first knew you wanted to be a doctor. Even the Osler Fellows, just think about it. Remember the extra studying in school, the volunteering, the extracurricular activities, all of this to help you be as competitive as possible. Remember how you nervously filled out the program application, and if you were like me, waited till the last second before the deadline to submit to make sure it was perfect. More importantly, do you remember the day McGill invited you for an interview? And the day that you dashed nervously from station to station while trying to make your 10 first grade impressions at the interviews? I mean, we all know how the MMIs work. Then remember the long, anxious, nail-biting wait to hear whether or not you were accepted. Then finally, at 6 p.m., you get an email with good news, granting you access to this respected medical school, and the unbelievable moment when you exploded with the realization that you guys made it in. You're here. Let's not forget, though, how proud and happy your parents were upon learning that their daughter or son was going to be a doctor. And now here you are, in second year, finally getting through the last course in BOM, Unit 8. Wow. Well, very, very soon, things are going to change. As you take the next step into your careers, you will enter the real world. Real hospitals, real doctors, real nurses, real hospital staff, and most importantly, very real patients. Over the next 2 years, it is up to you to soak up as much as you can to be the best that you can be. Up until now, you've had the opportunity to discuss medical cases in small groups and play out the scenarios. When you actually walk into the real world, the real hospital, decisions you make will one day maybe save or take a life. I don't know if I can stress how real this is, but that's tomorrow. Let's get back to today. Today we are here to celebrate the donning of the healer's habit, the white coat. I remember how nervous and excited I was to wear my white coat and finally become a real medical student. As you know, our McGill white coats are short jackets. Residents and staff doctors wear long coats, and most people in the hospital know at a glance that we are the medical students. The patients, however, on most part, do not know the difference, okay? To the patient who is frightened and nervous, white is the color of hope, and the lab coat is the symbol of the healer. Since you are wearing a white coat, you must be a doctor, and they will often refer to you as their doctor. Soon after I received my white coat, I remember one of the nurses asking me a question. I heard myself say, "I'm sorry, I'm just the medical student." When I thought about this later, I realized that even though as medical students we have limitations to the decisions that we can make, our impact on the lives of the patient is not diminished. We are not just medical students. When I look back on my time in medical school, I will always remember a beautiful lady with a beautiful smile, Mrs. B, one of my very first patients in internal medicine. She would sing me a song at every opportunity and then even ask me to dance. At first, we enjoyed a few dances. But eventually, she became too weak, so we would put her off to the weekend. Mrs. B was always surrounded by her loving husband and adoring daughters, one of whom would fly in from Toronto every couple of days to visit her. Things unexpectedly took a turn for the worse one day, and she had a stroke and lost her ability to speak and recognize who we were. I made sure to spend time with her and talk with her every day, but she no longer remembered me. But I never gave up. One morning, I even stopped the music therapist in the hall, and I asked him to please come and play a song for Mrs. B. So he came with his guitar, and as soon as he started strumming a beat and singing a song, she heard the music, and she started tapping her toes, smiling and humming to a musical tune. which we had heard no response from her before. I would regularly visit the family and at the bedside and keep them up to date about what was going with Mrs. B's status. And I would even email the daughter in Toronto to let her know what was going on. Eventually, my month ended on the unit, and I had to leave Mrs. B, who was waiting to transfer along to a long-term care facility. 2 weeks later, I received an email from her daughter letting me know that Mrs. B had passed away. There was a link included in her email. It was for her mother's obituary and funeral arrangements. As I was reading through, I noticed that the family had personally thanked me in the obituary for all the care that I had given her mother. I was just a medical student, and I was shocked that my name appeared in their last message to their beloved mother. I was so deeply touched by this gesture, and I'll never forget this. Another significant patient experience was this young mother who I had taken care of in prolonged labor, who I helped with her delivery. This was her first child, and she was terrified of the birth process. I stayed by her side, explained her all the steps, and tried to address some of her fears. We even watched her wedding video together. And even talked about my future and wedding to my recently new fiance, Evie. When it was time for the delivery, she was so tired because of all her fear and anxiety that I literally had to push on her stomach to make sure that this baby comes out. I remember the point the doctor was yelling at me, "Phil, push, push, Phil, push." I mean, I was pulling a sweat. She eventually gave birth to a healthy baby boy, but he required some close observation in the NICU. The next day, I went to go see her, and she mentioned that she was on her way to visit little Phil in the NICU. little Phil? She explained that she felt so fortunate to have had such a great doctor by her side to help her get through the delivery, and she wanted to honor me by giving my name to this baby. I was amazed that I had such a profound impact on this lady's life that she chose to include my name as her son's middle name. After all, I was just a medical student. Moments like these make me proud to be a medical student, not because I wear a white coat in the hospital, but because this white coat brings with it great human experiences that a classroom setting cannot teach. These next 2 years will be an emotional, sleep-deprived, eye-opening, life-enriching roller coaster. You will learn to do more than you thought possible. And if you do it right, you will take away friendships, experiences, and memories that will last you a lifetime. You have the drive and ambition that brought you to this point, and you have the passion and compassion you need to carry you through the rest of your way. You have embarked on a rewarding journey towards an honored and respected profession. So wear your white coat with pride and confidence, and always remember that you are so much more than just a medical student. Thank you. One last thing before I go, okay? It takes a room full of brilliant people to create the medical school class. However, it takes dedicated and hardworking individuals to make sure that your path is well aligned and you are guided smoothly throughout these 4 years. Whenever you get a chance, this is to all the students, take a moment and thank the wonderful members of the Undergraduate Medical Education and Student Affairs Office for all their hard work and long hours to make sure that you have enjoyed this roller coaster ride. Thank you.
Nous allons maintenant commencer avec la remise des sirops blancs. Les étudiants seront assistés avec les sirops par Dr. Don Boudreau, l'ancien directeur du programme d'études et de volet professionnalisme, et par Dr. Namta Gupta, historienne adjoint pour le Bureau des Affaires étudiants. We will now proceed with the donning of the white coats. You will be helped on with your coats by Dr. Don Boudreau, past director of the Office of Physicianship Curriculum Development, and by Dr. Namta Gupta, Assistant Dean of Student Affairs for the Faculty of Medicine. I would ask the students to please be ready in the lower step for your name to be called so you can come up immediately. And students will also receive a gift of 2 Osler books as gifts from the faculty, A Way of Life by William Osler and Sir William Osler, A Selection for Medical Students. But to keep these proceedings on schedule and to allow guests to mingle after the ceremony, the books will be available from the faculty office at a later date, and you will receive an email to say when these are available and picked up. I would ask the audience to please hold your applause until all the students have received their white coats. S'il vous plaît, gardez votre applaudissement jusqu'à tous les étudiants aient reçu leur sarrau. We might actually get the students to start lining up down the sides of the theater so that it'll be in alphabetical order, obviously. Or maybe we'll clear the first row. Okay, as long as you have a system in place. Okay, we're gonna get started. Anthony Albina. Alexandre Allard. Alexandre Allard Coutou. Cami Apkarian. Valérie Archer Desjoies. Armin Atarian. Maud B. Perra. Laura Baker. By Ruby Balram. Olivier Bannon, Charles-Olivier Basile, Shauna Bassel. Catherine Bégin-Gendon. Justine Bélanger. Laurence Bélanger. Jonathan Bergeron.
Melanie Bertillon. Avril Bissonnette. Kevin Biswas. Philippe Bouchard. Gabriel Bouchard-Roby. Jacinthe Poulet. Nala Boumani. Samuel Bourassa-Blanchette. Jonathan Bourget-Murray. Emily Bousquet. Guillaume Bousquet-Dion. Nathaniel Bowling. David Braganza. Bryce Berger. Juswan Judy Kai. Kai. Juswan Judy Kai. Alessandro Carini Gutierrez. Rosalie Cavin. Florence Cayouette. Kevin Chabot. Philippe Champagne. Yushin Chang. Nadine Chatter. Stephen Chen. Rebecca Cherniak. William Chu Kwan. Anne-José Côté. Ariane Corville de Bouillonnec. Guylaine D'Amour. Julie Daou. Michael D'Aquila.
Samuel de l'Étoile Morel. Melina Deban. Alexandre Desragans, Laurent Desjardins, Vincent Deslandes, Norman Diab, Julian Diaz Abele, Andre Diouf, Fabien Janji, André Doe. Annie Dubé, Marie-Pierre Dumas, François-Charles Dumouchel, Bryce Durafort, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, Mark Elfassi, Jessica Evans, Antoine Fortin, Yuri Friedland, Pascal Fougère, Alistair Fung, Olivier Gagné, Saleya Gangat, Richard Garfinkel, Alexandre Gauvreau, Daniel Godin, Daniel Gottesman, doesn't look anything like you. Alexander Govchevich, Catherine Granger. Justin Gravelin, Andrew Green, Florence Grégoire Briard. Guillaume Grelot. Julien Hébert. David Hainaut. Roxane Héru-Legault. Alice Hobeka. Helen Hsu. Rich Hsu. Yulia Christina Ionescu. Jordan Eisenberg. Gaurav Jain. Samir Jamul. Catherine G. Daniel Jones. Marketa Kabatnikova. Emily K. Rivet. Yasmin Kerouche. Noor Khatib. François Kazoum. Elaine Killebuck. Ariella Kleiman. Celine Corban. Victoria Corsos. Raphael Krauss. Catherine Locke. Charles-Alexandre Lacroix. Frédéric Laliberté. Vanessa LaSalle. Sabrine LeBlanc-Murphy. Jordan Levy. Nastasia Lejaich. Mo-Yu Lee. Shen Li. Ying Li. Samantha Liao. Shen Jian Liu. Jerry Liv. Stephen Lockwood. Artem Luhovi. Zira Lurie. Matthew Magyar. Juliana Mahood. Nicole Knack. Liana Morano, Gabrielle Mercil, Daniel Marinescu, Marco Mascarella. Sarah Massoud.
That's
my wife. Natalie Matthews. Jason McDevitt. Bruno Messier. Annalise Miller. Guillaume Mangeau-Martin. Francis Morin. Krista Morse. Patrick Moynihan. Louis-Antoine Mouly. Christophe Nelson. Jennifer Nicole. Deidre Osher. Jason Ostroff. Laurence Paradis-Surprenant. Valérie Paré-Miron. Adam Parent. Jason Parnes. Shuo Peng. Sophie Danielle Perrin. Daphné Perrin-Couture. Melissa Fleiderer. Dominique Pichet. Sabrina Piedemonte, Jennifer Pors, Marcus Prince, Shadi Rajabi, Nilesh Ramdoyal. Zara Ramji. Stephen Reed. Emily Rainin. Lara Richet. Tanya Riffey Archer. Aaron Rosen. David Rothstein. Alexandre Sauvé. Jean-Alexandre Sauvé. Paul Savage. And Julie Saxena. Solon Shore. Olga Severgin. Leila Shabbat. Mitchell Shane. Vajita Sivakumar. Priyanki Sivanta Raja. Ariane Smith. Woo-hoo. Leah Smith. Sophia Stantmiller. Gabrielle Steiger Levine. Jason Steinmetz, Nicolas Tassé, Louis Bruno Teberge, Samuel Thrall. David Toe, Michelle Tran, James Sui, Daphne Weisilber. Yifan Wang, Karen Willoughby, Fatma Zagia. Kathy Zhang, and Edward Zhang. This year. Now, there are four students that need to have their photos retaken after the event. Apparently, you had the wrong coat on, so your face doesn't match your name. So, Armin Atarian, Maud Perra, Olivier Bannon, and Charles-Olivier Basile. So, if you come down at the end, we'll retake your photographs. Alors, j'invite Daniel Jones à donner l'allocution de président de la classe et d'assister à sa classe avec le serment de la promotion 2015. I would like to ask Daniel Jones, president of the class of 2015, to address his class and to lead the class in their class pledge.
Dear members of the Faculty of Medicine, Osler Fellows, fellow students, family, and friends, good morning to you all. It's a great honor for me to be here today to represent such an outstanding group of medical students, the class of 2015. As I look back over the challenges and triumphs we've all faced over our first year of medical education, I'm filled with many emotions, pride, happiness, inspiration, even nostalgia. It seems like only yesterday we were anxiously introducing ourselves to one another. We received our fancy McGill Medicine school bags, which of course was quickly filled with heavy basis of medicine course notes. This was but one of the many experiences that I feel connected us in a very meaningful way, not only to each other, but in a collective sense, to our devoted teachers, our staff, administration, our Osler Fellows, our family and friends who continue to support us today. Much like the warp and the weft are woven to form a stable fabric, all of these relationships have brought stability, meaning, and purpose in our lives as medical students and as future doctors. Today is a special day, one that we will never forget. We not only receive our white coats, which we look really good in, I must say, but we also receive the responsibilities and privileges that come with this coat. I'm confident that as we develop and learn to care for our patients, we will continue to demonstrate the qualities that are central to the practice of good medicine. We will strive to be compassionate, humane, thorough, and of course, foster a love of lifelong learning. On behalf of the class of 2015, I'd like to extend our sincere gratitude to all those that not only made today possible, but who have been with us as students and have helped us reach this important milestone as we transition from classroom to clinic. To Dean Eidelman and Dr. Phil Gold, thank you sincerely for your insightful address and, of course, your sage advice, which we will carry with us as we transition on our journey to becoming physicians. To Associate Dean Primavesi, thank you for your kind words and for reminding us of the importance and significance of our future career. To our Osler Fellows, for shaping and molding us, thank you. To Sayuri Friedland and Bryce Durfor, our fellow classmates who helped to coordinate the class pledge, thank you very much. To Phil Vortzimus, for your advice and stories, thank you as we make our transition from bomb to clerkship and maybe delivering babies soon enough. So thank you very much for that. To Ann Briggs, who has worked with the White Coat since its inception and who has worked tirelessly throughout the night, thank you. To Toby, as well to Leo Titoro and Carolyn Cishan. And of course, Ann Wechsler, I should thank you as well because of all of your work and support. And Silvana DeLolo for being there since our first day at orientation. Where are you? Hi. Thank you for guiding us through the intricacies of medical school and for always having a little bit of chocolate on your desk. A big thank you to all the staff behind the scenes, and also most importantly, perhaps, our family and friends, our mentors, who have been instrumental in us being here today. Classmates, please join me in thanking this wonderful group of people. So, classmates, if you will please rise, class of 2015, and join me in reciting our class pledge. We recite first in French, if that's okay, followed by our one in English. So, all together. Nous, les membres de la classe de médecine de 2011, qui reflète une diversité qui se complète
Nous l'unissons pour participer comme le membre de l'ordre qui représente la Star-Rouge Blanc. Nous accueillons le rôle et les responsabilités qui l'accompagnent, qui se trouvent par rapport à notre profession, à notre collectivité ou à la vie de nos patients. Nous comprenons les besoins de nature multidimensionnelle de nos patients et nous nous engageons à favoriser un milieu de confort, d'ouverture, d'esprit et de croissance. À titre de membre passionné pour le volant médical, nous défendons les intérêts de nos patients et de leurs familles dans leur cheminement dans la maladie et la guérison, même dans les situations les plus éprouvantes. Nous représentons l'égalité et la justice et nous efforcerons de devenir plus élevés en matière de soins de qualité de vie afin que la dignité de nos patients nous vienne mieux en cas de vie et de mort. Nous nous rendons un apprentissage sans fin en cherchant notre inspiration dans l'inconnu afin d'innover les solutions de demain. Nous respecterons nos propres limites, celles de notre profession, et comprendrons les uns sur les autres pour les entrer, le soutien et la camaraderie. Par l'entremise de ce moment et l'agence, nous nous efforcerons notre ligne de la compréhension que nous pouvons si facilement nous accorder et nous rappeler à jamais le sens profond de respect mêlé de crainte avec lequel nous faisons cette promesse. Now in English. We, the McGill Medicine Class of 2015, arising from contemporary diversity, unite to humbly accept the honor that is the white coat. We welcome its accompanying role, responsibilities, our profession, our community, and the lives of our patients. We foremost embrace the multidimensional needs of our patients and commit to fostering environments of comfort, understanding, and growth. As passionate members of the medical profession, we stand by our patients and their families through a journey of illness and healing, even in the most trying situations. We will advocate for equality and justice and strive for redefining the highest standard of care and quality of life such that our parents' dignity will be upheld in life and in death. We will devote ourselves to unfinished learning, seeking inspiration from the unknown to innovate the solutions of tomorrow. We will respect our own limitations and those of our profession, and look to one another for guidance, support, and camaraderie. With this sincere pledge, we will strive to be worthy of the trust that strangers might so freely bestow upon us, and to forever remember the deep sense of awe with which we make this promise.
Take your seats, or you may remain standing if you like. We're almost done. Alors, merci à tous qui assistent aujourd'hui à cette cérémonie. Thank you very much to everyone who has come today. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the entire staff of the undergraduate medical department who made this morning possible, and they're standing on the side, but maybe you can come down the stairs a bit more so everybody can see you. I'd like to thank the Faculty of Medicine's Development and Alumni Relations Office who funded the White Coats and this event. And to the, I can't name everybody, but to the main organizers, Anne Briggs and Carolyn Sichon from the Physicianship. Sylvana DiLolo from Student Records and made sure everybody was registered before this event. Diana Colby from Communications, who orchestrated this, and to Leo Titero and Maya Zaremba from the Events Planning Office. I am sure that some of you are a little bit hungry by now, and so we'd like to invite you to a reception and celebration of our students and their families on the fifth and sixth floors of the lobby. So you may use the exits either the fifth floor at the bottom or a sixth floor at the top of the stairs. Maintenant, j'aimerais vous tous inviter à une réception pour les étudiants et leurs familles au foyer des sixième et cinquième étages. Veuillez utiliser les sorties avant et arrière en quittant les deux salles. And finally, in the words of Dr. Barry Slapkoff, Director of Physician Apprenticeship, enjoy the day and with humility take pride in your accomplishments. Merci, enjoy, and the four students have their photos redone. Please come down to the bottom.